This is Brian Meador from East Carolina University. You are listening to The Sports Objective, the official, unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome into the Sports Objective. I'm Dave Richmond along with Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you, man?
Doing well, Dave. How are you?
Doing well. Bubba always gives me a hard time about my wardrobe. So tonight I want to make sure that I wore an ECU. Can you see that? I wore an ECU and it's a purple shirt, Bubba. So did that pass inspection, by the way?
You did. Job well done.
Okay, good. All right, and now very excited to have back, speaking of a pirate that we think a lot of and a friend of the show for the last few years, great to have Ron Clements back on, author and an ECU grad, as you see there on the screen, those watching live right now, and obviously if you're watching archived in 2006. How are you, my friend?
Good. Yeah, ECU 06 right there. But I'm doing well. I'm actually repping my Milwaukee Brewers, the first place Milwaukee Brewers.
Hey, Bubba, by the way, next time, I just realized this, so it's not our fault, but next time we need to have some walk-up music from Ron. We need to play Willie Nelson on the road again because dude's living in an RV, really proud of him, jealous that he gets to live in an RV. And while we're – I don't know if I'm working hard, but that definitely Ron has a life, right, Bubba?
No doubt. And speaking of Milwaukee, Ron is talking about his shirt with the Milwaukee Brewers. A Brewers fan and also a Milwaukee Bucks fan is Corey Glore. And Corey will be joining us during the second half of the show. He's obviously director of broadcasting down with the Tulane Green Wave now. So we'll get a look at Willie Fritz's ball club. And we'll talk to Corey also about the Bucks winning the title.
Fear the deer. It's going to be the year of the cheese. So Bucks in July, Brewers in October, Badgers in January, and Packers in February.
There you go. All right. So you heard it here first. We have breaking news. So all the people, when you go to Vegas, just remember Ron Clements said, put all your money on those teams to Wisconsin, and certainly we do that. Ron, very excited. You know, you and I were talking pre-show in the green room about your book. I'm just fascinated by, first of all, I know it's a sportsman guide right to Route 66. I'm just fascinated by the whole Route 66. Maybe it's because I grew up watching National Lampoon's Vacation, you know, the Route 66 thing, how they were Chicago to LA. A lot of famous books have been written, but yours, is yours really the first one for sportsmen, like really for sports?
It is. A Sports Fan's Guide to Route 66 is the first ever sports book about Route 66. And it's pretty surprising that no one else thought to do this before, because there are a lot of people like you and I who love sports and love to travel. And yeah, it's shocking that no one had thought to connect the two with America's most famous highway. I'm really proud of the way the book turned out. You know, here it is in my hands right here. You can see the poster behind me. But there's about 300 photos in a Sports Fan Guide to Route 66, almost all of which were either taken by me or my wife. And then I did about 60 interviews in the book. And I was fortunate enough to get some media credentials along the way. And so I covered Illinois State football and University of Tulsa football. I saw that Tulsa-Memphis game in 2019 that came down to the wire. I saw a wild game between Idaho and Northern Arizona and Flagstaff, Arizona, last game of the season for those two teams. And then I saw a game at the Rose Bowl between Cal and UCLA. And the LA Lakers issued me a media credential. So one of the people I got to interview was this guy right here. I'm sure you can see that, right? I got to interview LeBron James for the book. And I took that picture that is on page 325 in the book. So I'm really proud of the way it turned out. It got released this past or a week ago on August 3rd, and Men's Journal included it as one of the best 20 new books of 2021. I'm on a list with James Patterson and Seth Rogen and Stacey Abrams. So that's some pretty heavy hitters there that I'm they're on the same list. So that was quite an honor. That list came out in May.
So how did you get to interview LeBron James? How did that come about? I mean, there's a lot of
It wasn't the one on one. It was part of a post game scrum, November 29th, 2019, when the Wizards played the Lakers at Staples Center. And the Lakers, I had reached out to the Lakers a couple months ahead of time, and they gave me a media credential for the book. So I got to roam all around Staples Center. It was Shaq jersey giveaway night, so I even got a spare Shaquille O'Neal jersey from a fan who I told him what I was doing with the book, and he was like, "Hey, I have an extra Shaq jersey. You want it?" I'm like, "Sure." So I have a Shaq Lakers jersey that I have yet to wear, but I got it. In November 2019, I told my wife that we're going to, for a couple's costume for Halloween, one of us is going to wear that Shaq jersey, and the other one's going to wear a Kevin Love jersey, and we're going to be Love Shaq.
That's really funny. That's good. The creativity, you get a 10, no doubt about it. That the book is, I can't wait to get my hands on it. It sounds really interesting, especially talk about the unusual places, places that maybe those of us, we know that I'm in my head, I'm going from Chicago, thinking about the different places all the way to LA, but what are some unusual places for a sports fan that maybe that those of us were not on the radar, but because of your book, they will be?
I'd say Pontiac, Illinois. I would start there if you're going from Chicago down, because Pontiac, first of all, is just a really cool Route 66 town. They got a huge mural in Pontiac that is one of the most photographed murals on Route 66. And but Pontiac also has the oldest holiday basketball tournament in the country. This is the mural in Pontiac, Illinois, that a lot of people take pictures of, and I took this picture. But this basketball tournament, though, in Pontiac, it takes place the week between Christmas and New Year's, and it started about 100 years ago, and 1926 is when the tournament was first held. Wow. They did miss a couple years during World War II, but this tournament it only invites Illinois schools, but Chicago Simeon has played in this tournament many, many times. And there was a year when, who was a standout guy with Duke who ended up getting drafted by the Bucks? That guy played in that tournament. And Jabari Parker, is that right?
Yeah, Parker, yeah.
Yeah, Jabari Parker. So when Jabari Parker was at Chicago Simeon, there were people who traveled as far as like from Toronto to go to watch him play in Pontiac. And so that was kind of surprising. And I was in Pontiac in late September. No, it was early October, rather, of 2019. So I did not get to attend the tournament, but I did interview Jim Dringwitz, who's the he's been the tournament director for many years, and I interviewed him for the book, and it's just one of several interviews I did along the way. The track president at Chicagoland Speedway, I mentioned LeBron, at several high school coaches and athletics directors and college coaches and athletics directors. I interviewed the AD at University of Tulsa, Derek Greggs, for this book. So I'm really, really proud of it. And another kind of a fun thing that people should do, they might not expect, is that to see a minor league baseball game in Amarillo, Texas, which also has minor league hockey. We did go to a minor league hockey game. It's the Amarillo Bulls in Texas. But the minor league team there, though, is a double-A affiliate of the Arizona Diamondbacks, and they're called the Amarillo Sod Poodles. And a sod poodle is a little known term for a prairie dog.
Oh, okay.
So I interviewed Sammy Levitt, who does the play-by-play for the Sod Poodles, and just a really good guy. But I want to read this stat, though, that I dug up about the history of baseball in minor league baseball in Amarillo. So, first of all, Tony Gwynn played for Amarillo when they were the Gold Sox as a Padres affiliate. When Tony Gwynn was coming up, he played there in 1981, and he hit .462 in the 23 games he played for the Gold Sox. So Tony Gwynn was pretty good. But one guy who never made it to the major leagues, though, was a guy named Bob Cruz. He died in 1986, but in 1948, he set a professional baseball record with 254 runs batted in. And he did that in 140 games. That season, Bob Cruz hit .404 and had 69 home runs to go with those 254 RBI. That is the greatest individual season in baseball history, and it took place in Amarillo. Bro, wow. There's stuff like that that I was able to dig up things, and I'm just, like I said, I'm just really, really proud of it.
Ron, you've talked about some of the folks you've interviewed, some of the pictures you've had the opportunity to take, you know, whether it's different individuals or venues and so forth. But just, and forgive me if you've already said this, I had to step away for a moment, but just talk about your desire to write this book and then just how long it took to write it.
Well, as someone who loves sports and loves travel, like I said before, it was shocking that nobody had ever thought to do it before. So I was like, hey, I'm going to do this. And so I didn't have, like, when I did Home Run on Wheels in 2018, when my wife and I went to all 30 Major League Baseball stadiums, I wrote that book. I self-published that book. And, but I was really, really hoping I was going to get a book deal with this. So I kind of did it with blind faith. I was like, I'm going to work on this. We're going to do this. And so my wife and I set out from Chicago in late September. The first sporting event we went to was a Chicago Blackhawks game. And then we went to a Bears game 4 days later. The cover on the book is Soldier Field in Chicago. And my wife took that photo with her phone. We got really, really lucky with sunset. The book is gorgeous. I'm really proud. I can't emphasize how proud I am of this, but we took 2 months in the fall of 2019 to travel down Route 66, and we left Los Angeles on December 2nd. So we started September 25th and finished December 2nd. And then I started writing, and I finished July 5th without a book deal. I didn't have anything. But then when I was finally done, I started sending out query letters. I think I sent out about half a dozen, and I only heard back from two. One was a no thanks, and one was a, hey, I want to know more. And that was from a guy named Mark Sedenquist at Imbrifex out of Las Vegas. And a couple weeks later, I was signing a contract with Imbrifex to have my book published. And so that usually doesn't happen. Something that, to one, to have a complete manuscript and then to get without a book deal, and then to get a book deal 2 weeks after you send out your first query letters. I guess it was meant to be. And I think it does really fill a void for the Route 66 traveler. Whether you're coming from Germany or Japan or England or Australia, it's a bucket list thing for a lot of people to do. And you know, if you're one of those foreign travelers and you're wondering, why in the hell do Americans care so much about high school and college sports? Well, I kind of steer you in the direction of maybe going to a high school or a college sporting event. And one thing I encourage, especially in the smaller towns on Route 66, is that if you really want to know about the communities you're visiting, you're driving through, whether it's Odell, Illinois, or Dwight, Illinois, or Needles, California, or Barstow, go to a high school sporting event and actually talk to people. Because you're going to end up talking to some 70-year-old person whose grandkids used to play there, whose kids used to play there, but they still go to those games. Because as much as the old motels on Route 66 and just the heritage of Route 66 are part of those community, the high school sports in those communities are also part of that the fabric of those communities. And that's one thing I really wanted to emphasize. So, you know, if you're in Clinton, Oklahoma, where they have a powerhouse high school football program, go to a game. Watch the Red Tornadoes right down the road from the Oklahoma Route 66 Museum.
One of the things we want to shift gears we can while we have you on, being a Pirate graduate, you follow the program, not only football, basketball, and baseball, I know pretty close. What are your thoughts about, as we started last week, fall camp with Mike Houston and the Pirates? How are you feeling this year?
Well, I told you before we started recording that I'm cautiously optimistic. I mean, it's been several years since they had a winning team, so I don't want to get my hopes too high, but I like that they recruited some offensive and defensive linemen, some highly regarded linemen on both sides of the ball. And that's one aspect where they've been lacking in recent years. And so hopefully those guys pan out into good players like the CJ Wilsons or the Jay Rosses of, you know, a decade ago. And they can return to winning conference championships and going to bowl games. Cause man, it's the last few years have been rough.
That's exactly right. The pickings are slim pickings, right? And the very fact, like we're talking about, having you're looking at a situation where the depth, you know, the first string was okay or good, but after that, then the second, third string, where you're holding your breath, how would they do? But I think Houston, finally, year three, is finally starting to just by I've said it a lot on the show, but just to when you cover the team, he's honest. He may not be as brutally honest as some coaches, but this year you can tell that he's finally starting to get turned the corner as far as that issue of depth, where he didn't have a lot of choices in the past of what he was going to do. And now this year, particularly, I know the defense has got a lot of depth there that we didn't have before. The ultimate question, like I was telling you, we have depth at offensive line. It's a matter of once you get down to that, say, second string, how many of those guys can, you know, you've had five or six guys you feel confident in. It might be three, four, five guys that you're wondering, will those guys step up? The offensive line for me, again, even though we have depth, that's the ultimate question mark for me on offense.
And I like that they brought in some grad transfers too, who already have some experience, because the freshmen, those linemen who are coming in as freshmen, yeah, they're probably not going to have much of an impact this year. But hopefully some of those grad transfers and some of the JUCO transfers will be able to have an impact and kind of set the foundation that hasn't been there since Ruffin McNeil was fired. Cautiously optimistic. Let's hope for six wins, and anything above that is gravy. As long as they go to a bowl game, I'll be happy.
That's exactly right. I know Bubba's going to be there.
We can focus on the national championship next year.
Sounds good to me.
Now, Ron, obviously another excellent season for East Carolina baseball, making a super regional, coming up shy at Vanderbilt in the pursuit of Omaha. I know back during that run, you had some comments or tweets that were perceived by some to be, maybe controversial, disrespectful, however you want to phrase it. But what are your thoughts on Cliff Godwin's program and where ECU baseball is?
Well, Godwin's done a great job, but unfortunately the program hasn't gotten over the hump, and it's extremely frustrating. That frustration was came out in those tweets. I've never been to the College World Series in Omaha, and I don't want to go until East Carolina's there. And damn it, I hope it happens soon. I hope it happens soon, because it's just I'm sick of waiting. I thought 2001 was going to be the year when they hosted a super regional in Kinston against Tennessee, and then they get swept. And so this is a 20-year history of frustration for me watching this program be good, be very good, but not great. And I'm still waiting for great. And I hope it happens. I want nothing but the best for the program. And, agree with me or not with what I said, I think we can all agree that the Vanderbilt whistle guy is the most annoying guy in sports.
Well, that's Bubba's big – I think Bubba likes him. So he was doing that after Bubba was whistling after the
Ron,
regional.
After the regional, I was doing it to
aggravate me.
Yeah, to get on Dave's nerves.
I'm being sarcastic, Bubba. I really don't think you're that you like.
But I will say, Ron, and I know you. I'm sure you're well aware of this. There are two Whistlers, and not that they aren't both annoying, but I spoke with the one that referred to himself as the less annoying Whistler, where it's not always the three whistles at a time. And when I spoke with him, I talked to Preacher Franklin on the phone, an extremely nice guy. And no, he's not a preacher. That's a nickname he earned from his childhood. I'm trying to remember the story. I think it was just because of him, you know, being very social and interacting with folks. But Preacher Franklin's an extremely nice guy. And we had it lined up for him to come on the program, but it fell through because of the tight time window there on game day. But Preacher Franklin obviously loves his Vanderbilt baseball. Speaking of Vanderbilt baseball, what were your thoughts on Kumar Rocker, you know, going 10th to the Mets and then failing to sign?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think Rocker is maybe not as good as the Mets thought he was, and that's why they didn't offer him the big contract. If you watched the series against East Carolina, and then even the games in Omaha, Rocker gets a strike zone that, for whatever reason, he gets a foot on either side of the plate. And he's not going to get that at the professional baseball level. And so maybe that's what the Mets saw. And so they're like, we're not going to give this guy $6 million. We'll tell you what, we'll give you $1 million and see how it pans out. And so I really don't know what went into the negotiations, but that's just like my – If I were the Mets, that's what I would have seen. How Rocker got the widest strike zone in the history of college baseball, and maybe they want him to, you know, work on becoming Greg Maddux a little bit more, where he can actually paint the corners instead of having a catcher behind the plate who will bring the ball in. I mean, and you got to give Tennessee's catcher credit for doing that, for helping his pitchers. He got so many called strike threes, or even called strike twos, where then the batter was, now I got to swing at anything close, right? Because the catcher would frame it so well that the umpire was fooled. So give Tennessee's catcher a lot of credit for what he did in the postseason this past spring and summer.
Well, that's another thing too, is you could look at the with Vanderbilt, you look at
I said Tennessee. I meant Vanderbilt. I said Tennessee, but I meant Vanderbilt.
I'm sorry. The very fact that they're going to get the calls that we don't get. But the good news is that sometimes I think it's like when you least like life, Ron, when you least expect it. Knowing you the last few years, I know that you are not being critical of the team. It's a matter of what you said, frustration. But the thing is that the team has been so good for so long, and you think, oh, this is the year, this is the year, this is the year. It's going to be one of those teams that you least expect it. It's going to be the one that goes to Omaha. A lot of the teams that we think that's going to get there, we've had so much talent in 2019. We don't know about last year. 2019 was a huge year. We had a lot of talent this year. And it's one of those things that's very frustrating because you want it so bad, not only for your alma mater, you want it bad for Cliff Godwin, all the coaches. You want it really bad for those players. My God, how many hours a week do those put everybody in the program spend on that? And they're so close every year, you know? 2017, obviously not. They didn't even make it. But most of the years, they're in it, and they're so close and so close and so close. And then, like you said, it's like, how do you get over that to the next level, over that hump?
Yeah, and yeah, you look at what who's the guy who went to the Cardinals in like the first round and is just killing it? He got promoted to AAA already, huh?
Yeah, Burleson.
Yeah, Burleson, actually, yeah. I saw Burley play yesterday evening down at the DBAP. He went 2-for-4, and I think he's 5 out of 14 now, 5 out of 14 or 5 out of 15.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to get drafted in, what was it, a month and a half ago, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're in AAA and just won, you know, on the doorstep of the big leagues. That just shows you the type of talent East Carolina has had. Gavin Williams, you know, going to getting drafted in the first round also. And so, yeah, they have talent. Now it's just a matter of catching lightning in a bottle and winning a super regional, not just getting to a super regional, but winning one. And I hope their trend of kind of a downward trending downward late in the season changes so that instead of going on the road for some of these super regionals, they can host a super regional like they did in 2001 against Tennessee, because you know you can't drop games to South Florida and Central Florida late in the year and then expect to be one of the top eight seeds and host a super regional, assuming you win the regional.
Yeah, that hurt us in the Houston series. There's a lot of stuff in there. Before we let you go, I want to ask you about basketball with Joe Dooley. Obviously, year four, we had a lot of problems with COVID. That was a sport that really hurt us the most. I think in February we played, what was it, like a few weeks. It was scary how many days in a row that we went 20-some days, right, Bubba, without a game. And so I want to get your thoughts on Joe Dooley, year four. Recruiting has gone very well for Coach Dooley this year. Just want to get your thoughts before we let you go.
I hope that South Carolina transfer works out. You know, this is a – I want – East Carolina has not been to the NCAA tournament since a lot of East Carolina fans were born. It was 1993 was the last time they were there, and they've only been there twice. The year the only other year was 1972 before I was born. So, yeah, I want to see East Carolina in the NCAA tournament and win a game. They were one and done in both 72 and 93, so that South Carolina transfer was big. Drawing a blank on his name, but I know he's a pretty good player. Just reading about him when that transfer happened. So if they can have a guy like that provide some veteran leadership for the younger guys and with the foundation Dooley's put in over the last 4 years or 3 years. Like I said about the football team, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, the South Carolina transfer that you referenced, so Frank, definitely – excited about him, but Vance Jackson Jr., who began his career at UConn, then went on to perform very well at New Mexico, and then didn't go as well at Arkansas. But that, I don't think that was as much anything. Just you know, even if you're a good talent, I mean, you transfer to a program like that, and you're there 1 year. You don't know exactly what to make of that. But I'm very excited about Vance. And then also Winston Tabbs from Boston College. He can really put the ball in the basket.
Yeah, we'll see. When does practice start? Late October?
It's coming up in sometime in September, I believe, right, Bubba?
September, okay.
I believe September is officially somewhere around there. But, Ryan, let's get the book. We want to sell a lot of copies for everybody. Tell everybody, I know, is it available digital where we can get it?
Yeah, you can get a Kindle version on Amazon. So it's pretty. Heck, it could be in your local Walmart right now or your Barnes and Noble. The website is sportsguide-rte66.scenicsidetrips.com. And if you just Google a sports fan's guide to Route 66, it'll bring up that link, the Amazon link, the Barnes and Noble link. You know, like I said, I'm really proud of a sports fan's guide to Route 66, and I hope it does well, and a lot of people read it, and a lot of people enjoy it. I got my first customer tweet today, where this guy named Philip Poling held up tweeted a picture of himself with the book, and so I was like, oh, cool, that's awesome. The book came out a week ago, and now I'm getting these tweets. So, yeah, like I said, I hope it does well. I'm really, really proud of it, and go Pirates.
All right, maybe you can get it on Audible. That would be cool, where I can ride down the road, listen to you talk about trip on Route 66. That would be cool. So,
my wife and I had talked about that because I have all of these recordings. If I were to ever do the Audible version of it, I would actually play the recordings that I have. So it's not me trying to mimic LeBron James. It would actually be LeBron James, you know?
Exactly. Give us social media where they can follow you, and then we'll let you go.
All right, it's at @Ron_Clements on Twitter, and then and that's about it.
All right, thanks, man. Guys. Good luck to the book. Appreciate you, man, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yep. Give my.
All right, Ron Clements, appreciate him very much. And now the guy that Bubba, this is the most awkward interview we've done, I think, in forever, because we had a guy that was a pirate who's no longer a pirate, right, Bubba?
Yeah, no doubt. Still getting used to seeing this guy in green. But speaking of green, and we talked to Ron, Corey, as far as fearing the deer, I was checking out that hat there.
Yeah, you got to be.
What does it say, Bubba? What does that say?
It doesn't say the Charlotte Hornets.
2021 NBA champions. The header is a nice touch. I know you've had that before, but seeing kind of that on your show for the first time, it's unique, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Used to seeing it in purple and gold, but no, we're obviously extremely happy for you. And how are things going down in New Orleans? How are you settling in?
Doing well. I've been here for past the month mark now, and it's very hot and very humid, and so I'm sweating more than I've ever sweat in my life. But the people here are great. The campus is beautiful. The facilities are awesome. The teams have been awesome to be around, and camp just started for football here, just like back there in Greenville. And so to be around the team now as they're getting going, that's been a blast here over the last couple of days. So it's been really, really a treat since I got down here.
You know, Corey, it's pretty funny because Bubba has had a lifelong, I guess, a bucket list to do Mardi Gras, and he has a whole bunch of beads saved up. So can he crash with you?
Yeah, sure. I got an air mattress. I'm about 15-minute drive outside of the downtown area, but Mardi Gras is everywhere. The parade routes go right by Tulane's campus. So come on down, bud. You got a place.
I've made one trip to New Orleans, and that was back in December of 2012, a little bit before Christmas, when the Pirates played in the New Orleans Bowl against Louisiana Raging Cajuns. So needless to say, Pirate Nation was outnumbered with about 30,000 or so Raging Cajuns there. But East Carolina had a good contingent, but unfortunately came up a little short in the game, lost that one by about 10.
It's yeah, I'm trying to think of when football, obviously, that's back in Greenville this year. Basketball will be here, so come on down for some basketball. It's a home and home this year. And then baseball will be here in New Orleans in the spring. It'll be Tulane hosting ECU. And I've already got a small glimpse of that schedule already from our end of things. I can't say anything yet, but I know East Carolina is coming this way come next spring. So make the journey down.
That's going to be really – I hate to even think about baseball season without Corey Glore, or any time for that matter, but certainly with baseball is going to be very different. Do you know – let me ask you this question, breaking news. Can you give us any breaking news? Do you know of when East Carolina will hire your replacement? And I hate to use that term replacement because you never can be replaced, but the next person that's going to be in the broadcast chair for East Carolina baseball, the voice?
I'll be frank here, gentlemen. You are probably more dialed into things at East Carolina than I might be by this point. I still have plenty of people that I talk to there. But in terms of that, in terms of timeline, I got nothing for you there. The position is open. I don't know when they are looking to fill it. It's probably going to be a little bit of time, I would imagine, because you still have – you got a while before the season will start, but I would imagine once fall really gets deep into the season, we get towards winter, then they'll probably start looking at some things. But I don't know. I have no idea where that process sits. I certain, you know, some people reached out to me about it when my news came out, just, hey, so how can I get in touch with people about this? I'm interested, that sort of thing. I directed him to a certain spot, but I am out of the loop when it comes to that.
So, Corey, talk about the podcast that Tulane Athletics is doing. I believe it's called The Current. Tell folks about that and what else you've had going on there before we dive into Willie Fritz Ball Club.
Yeah, the Current was the podcast that started actually with my predecessor, Andrew Allegretta. He put it together back in 2019, actually, and it really took off and became a very popular item that this athletic department was getting behind. And then when COVID hit and it really took out the potential, the possibility of doing the radio coaches shows on location, which are so popular around the country. And So the podcast became that, essentially. And that's what it's going to stay that way, because everyone loves the format that it became. So each week I'm sitting down with folks from around Tulane in some capacity, whether student athletes or coaches or staff members or folks who have played here, folks who contribute in some way, and giving folks, you know, an inside look at this athletic department. Not, you know, it's not just football based. It won't be just basketball come winter. It won't be baseball only come spring, but you're going to get a full kind of view of what goes on in this athletic department, whether it's, you know, this coming episode, which comes on Wednesday. I'm talking to our sailing coach because they were a national runner up this past spring. And so giving you a little bit of insight on some of the programs you maybe aren't thinking of, and talking to folks behind the scenes, like the director of equipment last week, is he was getting ready for fall football camp. Just little things like that. So that people who love Tulane, people who have been a part of this place for decades, whether they're here in New Orleans or elsewhere, they can get a little bit more of a insight as to what just makes this athletic department go.
Corey, I wanted to ask you, as far as your experience so far, about the fans, the support, and obviously New Orleans, it seems like from afar that Tulane does have a lot of good support. And I'm not just saying that because you're on. I think they're very underrated as far as the university goes. What's been your experience now that you're down in New Orleans? You've had a chance to get your feet wet on the culture there. We know about the great restaurants, and we joked about Mardi Gras, but a cool event. And we know about New Orleans, but as far as Tulane, what about the fans? How are they?
There is a, let me tell you about a specific group of fans. They're called the Greenbackers. And maybe you've come across them in your various interactions at games. They travel to a lot of games for all events. These guys have been diehard since the late 70s, early 80s. They meet weekly at a sports bar in suburban New Orleans just to get an agenda out, to have speakers out. I've been there before. They had me out the first week I moved down here. That group is as passionate of a group of fans as I've ever seen. A couple of them were at practice earlier today just to watch. There are some truly dedicated fans to this university here in New Orleans. There are a lot of fans of this school that are not in this city, that there are not, you know, the alumni base of Tulane is pretty widespread. They don't all stay here in New Orleans. And so, you know, that's where, you know, over the years you've seen, you know, some attendance numbers haven't been great here at Tulane. Well, the fans are there. The fans are out there. They're just everywhere. But there is a really great group, a central core of group here in this city, that this is everything to them. They don't want to hear about, you know, the team down in Baton Rouge. Like, they don't want to hear anything about that. They are Tulane fans. And it's been great to interact with them, great to know them. I mean, that was a big thing of what I wanted to do in Greenville, was get to know some of you guys when I first started, and I was able to kind of jump in right away doing that here. And that's been a really great element of my first couple of weeks down here.
When I think of Tulane fans, Corey, I think of, you know, watching the away games against Tulane when the Pirates have been playing Tulane in baseball specifically. What is it called? The hullabaloo? When Tulane scores a run, and that's always just stuck with me.
Yep, the one, a two, a hell of a hullabaloo. And I'm still getting the lyrics down for everything else there. I'm still raw on that. But no, I mean, and you know, I've seen it in baseball as well a couple of times. And the clashes that Tulane and East Carolina had on the baseball diamond at times have been pretty legendary in my time doing East Carolina games. And the fan bases, when these two meet on the baseball diamond, have been pretty ornery towards each other. And it's been that way on the field as well. So there's no love lost between these two. I know I heard from plenty of former players and current players at ECU baseball when this came out about, of all the places you're going to Tulane, really? Like, I got that a couple of times, but that's going to be a blast. It's going to be weird, I won't lie, but it will be a blast when these two on the baseball diamond collide next spring.
No question about it. And what are your thoughts on obviously you leave the Pirates, and I know you have a lot of us that are friends. Now you're obviously with Tulane. What about with Graf? Have you had a chance to he's one of our favorites, obviously. Andrew was great too, but Graf was one of the first, along with you, that were really good to us, like we could reach out to on a regular basis. And I know that he had gone to, I believe, the Pelicans and left Tulane. But have you had a chance to hang out with him any?
Yes, I have. He is doing well. He is at Saints camp pretty much every day because he does some stuff with them. But he's doing well. He is looking forward to hopefully having a normal NBA season to call and traveling this year because he wasn't able to last year. And he's doing good. He's the same old Ty Graffinini that you have known over the years. I'm having him on this show, but he's doing great. He and I, early on in my time here last month, we did a little social media video thing together where he welcomed me to Tulane, and that was a great thing to do. He was really game for that. So he's been a good friend of mine, a good supporter of mine for a long time, and now being in the same city, kind of, you know, him being on my right hip and vice versa, now that I start this journey, has been a real thrill for me.
Speaking of camp, obviously on college football, fall camp has been getting underway here the last few days. Talk about Willie Fritz's ball club, you know, consistent winner over the last few years. Do you see this club maybe being the one that starts to contend for a conference crown?
It's fascinating because I think talent-wise, yeah, I think they're a top 4 or 5 team in this league. It's as deep of a team as he's had here, and this will be year 6 for Willie. And heading into camp, there aren't a ton of, frankly, position battles up for grabs. The right side of the offensive line is very much a question. They're rotating a couple of guys in there at the start. And the D-line, you're replacing two really key parts of last year's team. Cam Sample and the D-line, Patrick Johnson, was the Joker linebacker, who's essentially an edge rusher, but they're both gone to the draft. And so you have voids there. But everywhere else, by and large, they feel really good about where they sit, and they feel good about the two deep on those positions. So talent-wise, yeah, I think they're at that point where they can contend with, you know, Cincinnati is a pretty clear number one. But with a UCF, with a Houston, with an SMU, you know, Memphis and Tulsa, I know, are picked over Tulane by the media last week. But I put Tulane on that pedestal with certainly those two, and with the SMU and the Houston as well. I think they're that good. The schedule will dictate quite a lot. And I've never been a guy that says, well, the record doesn't tell the tale of what this team is. But the non-conference schedule is brutal, and it's as hard as you're going to get in the country. And then the 6 teams that were picked above Tulane in the preseason poll, Tulane plays them all. I mean, they only play 2 teams underneath them, East Carolina and USF. And so they're going to see, you know, Oklahoma. They're going to see Ole Miss. They're going to see UAB. And then they're going to see everyone who was picked above them in this league this year. It's a gauntlet of a schedule. This team's equipped to handle that, but will that translate into an 8-win, 9-win season where I think the team can be? We'll have to find out because they're that good, but will the teams that they're going to play allow them to actually break through like that?
Hey, and for folks who may not be aware, very quickly, Dave, I wanted to touch on this since Corey's talking about the non-conference schedule. A lot of folks may be aware, but Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley's bringing the Sooners into Yulman Stadium for the opener. And then talk about those other tremendous non-conference games.
Yeah, Oklahoma is certainly – when you go around town here, you will have people saying – Oklahoma is coming to Tulane? We say, yeah. And then they automatically assume that that game's going to be in the dome. And then when we tell them it's on campus, it's even more surprising that Oklahoma is going to come to Yulman Stadium. That game, you know, single game tickets haven't been released yet here at Tulane. There won't be any for Oklahoma. Like, that thing's gone. Like, it's completely sold out. So that will tell you, obviously, Oklahoma have some folks traveling in for that, but that tells you kind of the anticipation here as well, that it's really lit a spark. in this city. And then you have Morgan State week two. You'd like to think that's a win. And then you travel to Ole Miss, which, you know, again, this is where I think talent-wise, Tulane can go toe-to-toe with an Ole Miss. Week three of conference play, you're on the road. You don't quite know what Lane Kiffin is going to look like with that group. It's going to be a fascinating matchup. And then you back it up with a home game with UAB, who is Conference USA champion, picked to win that division that they're in again this year. That non-conference slate, those four games before the trip to Greenville, I mean, you are 2-2 is a great run through that. 3-1 is unbelievable. But if you can get out of that with a 2-2 mark, I think Willie Fritz would be okay with that heading into week five against ECU.
Speaking of ECU, ECU is in the same predicament, not same, but a tough non-schedule. And that's what I've been saying for the Pirates this year. 2-2 would certainly do that. By the way, a history lesson for Pirate, not only Pirate fans, but obviously folks watching, listen to the podcast. We'll talk in a little bit about conference realignment, but I had forgotten, because it was before my time, believe it or not, I look maybe older than I am, but I had forgotten Tulane was one of the founding members of the SEC.
Yep.
Had three titles, but, you know, they have more SEC titles in South Carolina and a lot of other schools. Not
Mississippi State.
Not throwing shade on Mississippi State or South Carolina and some of the other schools. But talk about I brought that up on purpose because people may not realize the rich tradition of football and certainly how proud the fans are. Just like you were talking about, I was just really fascinated. Like, I was like, wow, I can't believe I forgot that. I knew that when I was way younger, and it didn't dawn on me again.
Yeah, there's a deeply rooted, successful history here at Tulane that a lot of fans still will still bring to the forefront, and it's worthy of that. You're right, that not only were SEC founding member, but they were successful in it. And then part of the allure of coming down here for me is that the athletic department, the people here at Tulane, they want to get more prevalent within the city of New Orleans and make a strong push at making the, you know, bringing these two back together. Because for a long time, for a good probably 12, 14 years, Tulane football and Tulane basketball were really, really down. They had an undefeated run in 98, which is still held in lore here. But then after that, it's been real rocky. And then the Katrina year where they were playing everywhere, just a miserable season for obvious reasons. There's almost a lost generation of fans around Tulane. And now you can sense a swing back upward here with the recent run of football here, some excitement around basketball. And baseball has always been very important down here. And so you're seeing it trend back upward. And that's important to the folks here in this department to bring Tulane and New Orleans back in together and make sure that there isn't another gap, a decade plus gap of interest. And everyone's driving behind that. It's really infectious to be a part of right now.
Corey, speaking of basketball, Johnny Gardner chimes in on Facebook saying, is Ron Hunter as good of a guy as he comes across as? Seems like he would be great to work with.
Johnny, let me tell you, Ron Hunter is awesome. And I haven't had a ton of recent interaction with him. I met him in my interview tour back in June. He is exactly what you think he would be. And I've been graced pretty well here with the three coaches that I'll be working predominantly with. Willie Fritz is as genuine as they come. And it's at times a little surprising to when you hear him, when you talk to him, when you interact with him, it's hard to connect that he's a Division I college football coach, because by and large, you think a college football Division I head coach is just going to be like just madness to work with. There's so much that they operate under and a lot of stress, but Willie is unbelievable to be around. Ron is as energetic and as passionate as anyone I've ever interacted with. And there is a real groundswell of support behind him in getting Tulane basketball just back to where it needs to be here. And then Travis Jewett, you know, it's fun being on the other side of that for as long as I was. And then, you know, being able to walk into Travis Jewett's office here a few days ago and just hang out and chat with him for, you know, a couple minutes and just hang out. Like he's as good of a guy as you would want in a coach like that, even if fans back in Greenville would be surprised to hear that with some of the clashes that have been had with him over the years. Those three guys are some really superb gentlemen to be around, to work with. It's going to make my job a lot of fun. It already is, but those three are really something special.
No question about it. Corey, we were just talking about, I want to get your take on certainly about conference realignment. Get your thoughts on that. Where do you see things stand? I know a lot of people were talking about the Big 12 rating of the American, but as we've seen over the last week or two, it may be the other way around where the American rates the Big 12. I know there was talk last week about the Pac-12, and I haven't had a chance today. I've been in a different situation where I hadn't had a chance to listen or pay attention to the media at all today. So I'm kind of coming here a little bit blind as far as conference realignment. But where do you stand on that? What's your take on, do you have a hot take on conference realignment?
You know, I don't know if I really do. It's both surprising and not surprising to see what has happened with Oklahoma and Texas. I think the way in which it has gone down is the surprising part, not that this is occurring. It's fascinating. It's going to be fascinating to watch play out over the next couple of years. And I do think it's going to take longer than maybe fans will hope for the other chips to fall. Because there's not a great amount of rush you feel at the moment until the next domino tumbles. And whatever that's going to be, we don't know. I think there are certainly some players here that can make their influence felt, whether it is in the Big 12 or the American or the Pac-12 or the ACC or the Big 10. Someone's going to make the next move here. And I'm fascinated to see which way it shakes out, because I truly don't know where it's going to go. But all I can figure is that something's going to happen. And hopefully it's in the benefit of Tulane. Hopefully it's in the benefit of you guys back there at East Carolina as well, whatever shakes out, because this was the first step. And I think the long-term structure of college sports forming. And I hope that we're on the right side of it. I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't know what that's going to be. I don't know how long it's going to take. But I certainly know that it's not over. Like, it's not going to sit put with where we are now. And hopefully things work out for the better of the schools that we care about.
One of the questions I had for you, I realize I haven't asked it, so I better ask it before my old age shall forget to ask it again. I was going to ask you earlier on about name, image, and likeness. How is that? I mean, you have a great university, Tulane. I'm sure you get a great education, right? And you have a great city. It seems like to me, if I'm a kid, not that I'm going to not come to Greenville because I love Greenville, but it just seems like to me a town like a Memphis, a Houston, a Cincinnati, this particular case with New Orleans. I mean, New Orleans, I've been there a few times, and with the culture and I hate to say party because it's more than that. There's a lot of cool stuff there. Music scene, I could go on and on, but what about name, image, likeness? Is that a situation where Tulane can get a recruit because you're like in New Orleans and you've got a pro city and you've got a lot of cool people there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to strengthen a pretty good selling point here where, I mean, to come here to play sports, it's a slightly different animal than a lot of other schools, because it's not cheap to come here. Like, if you're walking on, then you really have to work your tail off. Because I think only Stanford is more expensive tuition-wise of an FBS football school than Tulane. And so the selling point for a Willie Fritz to go into a kid's home and say, all right, here's a scholarship. You're going to get a world-class, like, insanely good education here. it's going to be challenging here to go to school and then play football in a great city with a good team in a really good league in a great facility. And it's also going to be like, I was out of practice this morning. It was 85 degrees at 7:30 and humid. Like it, you have to be tough, like really tough to pull this off here. And then on top of that, yeah, there are opportunities, a lot of opportunities in this city to benefit in the NIL game. And a few guys on this football team are, I mean, just like at ECU, like there are a group of guys that already have some deals put in place here. You know, I know the school cannot aid in anything like that. Louisiana's law is a little bit more liberal than other states right now in terms of NIL. Like if a player wants to use the Tulane logo for anything that he or she does, as long as the school gives approval, then they can, which is not the case in a lot of other places. But, you know, Willie Fritz can't go out and say, like, you know, look at this, look at this, look at this, nor would he. He also, I mean, he's a big supporter and proponent of NIL. He's been very public about that, but he's also been very public about, you know, the scholarship you get here is unlike what many other kids who are doing what you're doing will get. And so, yeah, it is a very unique addition to what the selling point could be for recruits coming to Tulane. There are advantages here. You have to be careful here, though. As you mentioned, there are a lot of potential potholes. Literally, I've driven the roads here. There are a lot of potholes here. But also figuratively, with, you know, you can't make deals with certain places. You can't go out and make a deal with the casino. Like, you can't go out and make a deal with the drive-through daiquiri shop. Like, you can't do a lot of that stuff that is there here in New Orleans that you can walk out of the door and see. So you have to have the right people. You have to have the education. And Tulane's had a education program in place for over a year to make sure that everybody is on the same page and aware of what needs to be done to benefit the student athlete in the best way possible. It's a unique spot that Tulane is in.
No question about it. When we get a chance, ask me about the Walking Vampire Tour. That was classic.
About that, yes.
Oh my goodness, so 2018.
I've not done it, but I have heard about it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. As far as Tulane basketball, baseball, do you have any idea, looking way ahead? We kind of have a feeling, a little bit of a feeling about football, but what about basketball and baseball while we have you on?
Yeah, I think Ron Hunter is excited about the possibility of his basketball team. He gets pretty much everyone back from last year. And it's a really young team that had to manage what was, you know, I heard you guys talking to Ron about how basketball was probably hit harder than most seasons across college sports in terms of COVID. And it hit Tulane as well. To manage that with a very young team, to keep them all together, to bring them back for this year. And it gives him, you know, another year to really get his system set. It almost feels like last year was they grew together, they learned together, they had to go through a ton together. And now, like, they're going to come out the better side for it by still being here in New Orleans together. So I think there is some excitement about what the next step could be for Green Wave basketball. And then baseball, that's going to be interesting because, you know, they were right there, as we know very well, for winning this conference back in the spring. And then they had a horrid weekend in Cincinnati, and that wiped out any shot that they had. It probably cost them an NCAA tournament spot, and then made a run in the conference tournament. They lost all their starting pitchers in the draft, and so they will have to completely remake the starting rotation here. Offensively, they're pretty well set. They had a great young core of hitters that I saw very well in Greenville. And by and large, you're getting all of them back. On the mound, there will be questions about what Tulane can find to replace a Braden Olthoff and a Jack Aldrich and a Donovan Benoit, because those were studs leading the way for them this past year that propelled them the success that they had. So that's going to be the question for Tulane baseball next spring.
No question about it. We had another question from Johnny Gardner, the loyal listener, viewer, great friend of the show, too. He said, is that the difference of private versus public institution or just the route that Tulane has decided to go, meaning offering up university image logo for the NIL?
I don't think it's a private or public thing, Johnny. That's the decision that the school made. The law allows them to make that decision here in Louisiana and Tulane. Troy Dannon, the athletic director, he's a huge proponent of this as well. And so they were setting this up last summer, late spring, frankly. They saw this coming on the horizon. So this is a decision that Tulane has made where if a student athlete reaches out and says, can I use the logo, they'll review what the deal is, what the sponsorship is, and make the call on whether or not. But they could. And so I don't think it's a private v public thing, just what Tulane decided to do.
Do you think this team is going bowling? What do you think?
I think football? So. They're more than good enough talent-wise to be a bowl team. I'm just absolutely fascinated by what they're going to be able to do with this schedule. I mean, it's a weird double-edged sword, frankly, because this team's really good. Like, I think offensively they can really break out this year under a new OC. You have Michael Pratt for his second season after having a breakout freshman year at quarterback. You got some really good wideout threats. Jaquan Jackson is a really, really impressive slot receiver and a punt returner. And you have running back might be their deepest position. So I think they can score. I think they'll be able to score more than Tulane teams in the past. And then defensively, that's been Willie Fritz's calling card. Their linebacking group is insane. And then if they can sort out who's going to be playing up front. And then secondary was their weakness last year. They gave up way too many big plays. And that cost them a few games. It cost them a Tulsa game at the very end. It cost them a Navy game. Like, I mean, they should have been better than 6-6 last year, but they gave a couple big plays away at the end of the game. They can get that shored up with a new DC, Chris Hampton, who was a defensive backs coach here for 4 years. And this team's going to be really, really, really good. Oklahoma week one is quite the ask. Can they make it through that? And then you get to Ole Miss and UAB before you even make the trip to Greenville, and a team that, you know, at the end of the season, will that week five game, how much will that mean for both of these teams? I think that's certainly not out of the realm of possibility that matchup is bigger than we might realize.
It seems like for both Pirates and for the Green Wave that, you know, when you hear about every game counting like a coach speak, well, it seems like this year with the great conference, we're in the American and the non-conference, every game matters.
Yeah, and I think East Carolina is probably maybe not in a similar spot to where Tulane is, but I think there's some more optimism around ECU football heading into this year with so many returners, especially offensively, that, you know, that this should be the year I would imagine at East Carolina to get to back to the 6-win mark at minimum. And so that week five game could be in retrospect, look back for both of these squads.
Bubba, did you have another question for Corey?
No, Corey, really appreciate you coming on. I know what it was, Dave. I was going to just chime in when Corey's talking about that Tulane defense last season when they won handily in Greenville. That defensive line was something else, and they made the Pirates one-dimensional. We cannot run the football. And then when we were one-dimensional, we couldn't pass protect.
Yeah, and that was also – that was one of Pratt's better games as well. He had 3 touchdowns in that game as he was still getting his feet wet a little bit as the starting QB. And, you know, he's going to get, you know, all of his wideout weapons are back. His tight ends are back. Lose the top 2 running backs, but they feel they're actually better off with the running back crew they have now with Tajay Spears coming back from a torn ACL, Cam Carroll right behind him, and then they get a transfer from Utah, Devin Brumfield. They think they can go 3 deep as the running back position. They really, really like where the potential this offense can be. And I remember I was at that game in Greenville where the mentality in that press box was, yeah, East Carolina can come out with a win here. And then it was, you're at Patrick Johnson, Cam Sample up front were monsters defensively, but it was Michael Pratt that really kind of stole the show. And that, I think, caught a lot of people by surprise there in Greenville. It won't, I gather, in the first weekend of October this year.
And that was not Patrick Johnson for Pirate fans of 94.3 The Game. That was Patrick Johnson of the Green Wave.
Slightly different makeup, like skill set of this Patrick Johnson.
I love you, PJ. We're going to have him on in the next week or two, but I just want to make that clarification there. Corey, man, we appreciate you so much. You've been so good to us all the way back to the beginning of the show. I think you came on the second month we were on. As always, it's going to be different now, but it's great to have a friend, another friend in the Tulane and another friend in the American Conference. So we've been with you now. You've changed colors, but you're definitely not a chameleon, right? I mean, you're changing colors all the time.
No, I rarely change colors this rapidly like I did this summer where I was in Nashville and then 2 days later I was in New Orleans interviewing for a job. That's not usually how I go about it. Hey, it's a damn good successful season when you get to the Super Regionals, by the way.
No doubt. No doubt. Honest
to fans who are watching and just want to make sure that gets across.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's, not quite.
It's always disappointing when we don't make it Omaha, but never a disappointment in the slightest when you're in the final 16 in the country.
Yeah, I'll leave it at that, but I was certainly listening to Ron. Great guy.
I knew you were.
Reading his book, but that is that's just not correct.
All right.
Not to leave it like that. I apologize.
Go ahead and drop the mic, Corey.
Yeah, I'll drop the mic there. It was I loved every second of it with East Carolina. I love coming out with you guys. I can't imagine you want me on weekly next spring for extra innings. But I loved it. I wouldn't trade it for the world. Do I wish it ended a little bit differently? Absolutely. The strike zone was horrid in Nashville. But those 6 years of watching that program do what they did game after game after game, that was something else. And I look forward to seeing it from a different vantage point coming up for a weekend next spring. It's going to be, by that point, I'll be well set as a voice of Tulane, but it'll still be a little strange, no question.
Yeah, no movie lines or anything like that. Well, maybe you can come on and do a guest appearance with that.
Yeah, I mean, I won't rule out the movie lines yet. I'm still in regular communication with you guys, with Brick House. We're still talking, so I won't rule them out yet. It might surprise some people here, but we won't put the cart before the horse just yet. And shout outs are certainly back on the table. Just saying.
All right, cool, Corey. Man, good talking to you. Great catching up. And if you definitely love to have you back on maybe mid-season or sometime during this season to see how things are going, and obviously for that game too.
Gentlemen, week five. I don't think a time's been set yet, but I will be back in Greenville the first weekend of October, and hopefully I can run across you gentlemen if you're in that press box for that game. By all means, swing by the visitors radio booth. Because that's where I will be first weekend of October. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a little strange to be back there and in the role that I'm in right now, but I cannot be looking forward to it any more than what I am.
No doubt. Okay, I will definitely be there for that game, and I'll see if I can get Kyle for the first time ever in the press box. Come on, you get to see your buddy Corey.
Yeah, if I can't draw him out into the press box, then nothing will.
That's right. No doubt. All right, buddy. Have a good one. Appreciate you, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good night. We will talk soon. Roll wave.
All right. You see him say, go Pirates, Bubba, but totally understand that's his new job, director of broadcasting with the Tulane Green Wave, our good friend. When I say old friend, someone that's been with us the whole show, Corey Glore. Interesting. Let's talk about, I know, Bubba, you want to talk about season tickets, right?
Yeah, as of last Wednesday, five days ago now or so, season ticket sales were right around 12,400. Obviously, we're trying to eclipse the 14,000 mark. Still got time to do it. So hopefully that will make that, hopefully Pirate Nation, excuse me, will make that happen. Also, ticket sales for App State are no longer being done through the ECU ticket office. So if you call 1-800-ECU, they'll redirect you to the Charlotte Sports Foundation. And we'll put that link on our social media as we've done in the past. We'll pin that on our Twitter as well as our Facebook page. And so Pirate Nation, and obviously most of those people will be in the choir, so to speak, hopefully, but definitely get those tickets and get down to Charlotte and Bank of America Stadium on September 2nd. And then you had some interesting interaction on Twitter. Eric Ward from ECU Marketing, he chimed in. He was answering a question about the mobile ticketing that is in place. He was saying, as we're transitioning into the mobile ticketing, we're definitely taking advantage of it to increase options for ticket returns and donations. Part of that will be when you receive your tickets, you can return them to the ticket office to donate. Part of your process, once allocated, will be you have the option to donate or transfer, both by individual game or by the entire season. And the ticket office has done a really awesome job exploring all avenues as we grow in this area, and I'm sure we'll tweak it as needed in the years to come.
I'm glad you brought that up, Bubba. I've been wondering about that, and I didn't know about that. So thank you for bringing that up tonight on the show, because that's something that we need more Pirate fans, and there's a lot of people that they can't go to a game, as you know, that some of us have to work and are sweating certain games, as I've been talking to you, obviously, off air about. And so that's a situation. If you have the regular season tickets, if you will, for in Greenville, that'll be nice to know, hey, I can't go to this game and I can donate it back, right?
Yeah, that's something that down through the years has been done via message boards and obviously just communication otherwise. But now it's nice to have that option to do it electronically, where you don't have to have all the other parties involved. You certainly have those options, but if you want to do it electronically, where you can get rid of them more easily, if those first folks that you ask may not need the tickets, and you have that option of doing so, and you know, literally thousands of Pirate fans, at the click of a button on your phone can claim tickets. So it's really nice to have. And
yeah, that's going to be really cool as we move along through, especially when Pirates get better as the season goes on and certainly beyond. That's going to be a great thing for sure. Hey, Bubba, wanted to talk about, while we have a chance, let's talk about Burley. I know we're going to talk about him, and then we're out of the time. But, man, Burleson, you were there at the game last night, so we wanted to talk about that. Burley was my hometown team of the Durham Bulls, and just really proud of the success he's had as beyond his Pirate uniform.
Yeah, very glad that my parents and I were able to get down to the DBAP on yesterday afternoon, 5 o'clock first pitch there against the Memphis Redbirds. And Burley, he played in 4 out of the 6 games in the series. In game 3, he suffered some type of undisclosed nagging injury. Not being there, I'm not sure what it was, but he was good to go yesterday. Started in left field and batted 7th and went 2-for-4. So that was pretty cool to get to see Burley's first multi-hit game in AAA. And Burley is now 5 out of 15, so batting .333 in AAA.
Really good stuff there. Burley is just one of those special players. And, you know, if you wonder about Cliff Godwin, that speaks high volumes of how good our program is. Not good, how great our program is. Let me be very careful there and clear that we've got a great program. And guys like Burley would not come to our program if we're mediocre. We are going to break through. We will get to Omaha. And Burley is one of those players that helped us get closer to that.
And I did see several Pirates there, and I'm sure they were there throughout the 6-game series. And with the way minor league baseball is doing it this year, and I've heard that that's going to continue into the future, just because you can cut down on travel costs so greatly that it wasn't just a COVID thing; it was a finance thing. So, will be interesting to see if that is in
fact the case moving into 2022 and beyond, beyond the COVID-19 pandemic. But very excited to see Burley doing so well, and hopefully he'll be playing in St. Louis in the very near future. Got to like his chances with the way he's risen from high A ball to Triple A.
No question. You know what, Bubba, that program that that franchise, I should say, with St. Louis, I mean, my gosh, you go way, way back. Talk about, we're talking about the history of Tulane. How about the history of St. Louis, the Cardinals? I mean, they're right up there with the Yankees and Dodgers. I mean, there's certain programs and franchises in this case that, I mean, that are very special. And the fact that he's in that organization, the fact that he's moved very well, I tell you what, unless he gets injured or something like that, God forbid, I think he will be playing with a Cardinals uniform sooner than later.
Yeah, absolutely. Alec Burleson is very blessed to be in that Cardinals organization. It's so tradition-rich, as you mentioned, as so many other Pirates are, and guys like Chris Holba, to name one, Evan Krasinski. Evan Krasinski's been as high as Triple A, and I think he may be battling an injury. I need to research Cruz. I know he was in Memphis earlier this season, but for those who may not were not able to get out to the DBAP over the last 6 days, definitely check out our YouTube channel. Have some pictures as well as video footage of Alec Burleson from that series finale that they lost in 10 innings to the Durham Bulls, where Burley went 2-for-4 and also made some nice plays in the field.
Really happy for him, and go Burley. Very happy for him. And the man, St. Louis has a great, great player, person and player for sure. And good luck to him. No doubt about it. We'll keep up his progress. And Bubba, I've got to check that out. Thank you for doing that. I know you're always great about taking pictures and videos and stuff of different stadiums. So folks, always he's working hard on our social media, especially with our YouTube channel, and great stuff there. Do you have anything before we go, buddy?
Yeah, a couple things. We're going to be giving away a couple of season tickets. We've talked about that for quite some time, but have not begun the contest yet, but it is here. So that will definitely be starting here in the next 2 or 3 days, definitely by the weekend, if not sooner. So stay tuned on Facebook. Make sure you like and follow. Subscribe on YouTube, and there will be a video on YouTube talking about how you can win these two season tickets. They're up in the fan zone, section 213 or 214. I can't recall which, but a couple of free tickets to some lucky Pirate fan to be able to watch East Carolina in all 6 home games this year. And then also upcoming content on Thursday, we'll be catching up with our buddy from ESPN, Rini Ngolia. He helped host the AAC Media Days down in Texas. Rainey will be coming on to obviously break down East Carolina, but also the American, and take a look at college football on the whole.
Did a great job of Media Days, and looking forward to having him on. He's a class act for sure. And Norfolk next for Pirate fans in the Tidewater area. You want to see Burley play, that's where he's going to be. So thank you, Johnny. Johnny's one of the best. I'll tell you what, we need to, hopefully at some point he'll come on the show, right, Bubba?
Yeah, we'll definitely get Johnny on air at some point. And then also, in addition to Rini Ngolia from ESPN on Thursday night, we'll have Sam Raz, our buddy with the Scott and Holman podcast, to take a look at Dana Holgorsen and the Cougars as they enter year 3. Disappointing, 7-13 from the first 2 years. For the $4 million man or whatever Dana's making out there.
That's so right, Bubba.
Very important year for Dana Holgorsen, and Clayton Toon, quarterback there, is very talented in the Cougs. Some folks are projecting them to win 8 games, and they definitely need to do that. At the very least, need to get to a bowl game. But that's a program that has such high expectations after what they had accomplished under previous regimes.
No question about it. And they definitely have the talent, certainly with that right close by. And that Houston, I don't know if it's Metroplex, but certainly the metropolitan area, they really have a lot of talent, as you know, that if you follow college sports, and this particular case, college football for sure. All right, Bubba, you ready to roll?
Absolutely.
All right. Appreciate you, Bubba. Thank you for all your hard work behind the scenes, my friend. And appreciate Ron and Corey, two of our good friends, for coming on tonight. Until next time, you've been watching and listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Good night, everybody. And as always, go Pirates.
Hello, Pirate Nation. This is Luke Fisher, Hall of Fame tight end from the Peach Bowl. I want to send much love to the Pirate family and all my brothers and sisters out there that bleed purple and gold. I can truly say that I believe this will be our year. Our guys will put the time in and make it happen. One question I have is, will you believe?